Hello, I'm Bishop Jaime Soto. The pandemic continues to change the way we serve our communities. It has also given us opportunities. In this uncertain time, let's strive to partner effectively with parents. Let's work together to equip families for practicing their faith every day at home and in the community. Jesus is calling us to holiness and encourages us to rejoice and be glad in the midst of our challenges. This year, Ministry Days will virtually equip parish and school ministry leaders for these new realities, which include Zoom calls, Facebook Lives, and Insta stories. I invite all the faithful in the Diocese of Sacramento to attend our Ministry Days on Saturday, September 26th. There will be keynotes and 40 workshops in English and Spanish meant to inspire and equip you for ministry in your parish and your home. You can find more information and register at www.ministrydays.com.
From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased to welcome in Andy Rivas, the Executive Director of the California Catholic Conference, representing all the bishops of the state of California. Andy, good day to you.
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you?
Doing fine. I've just been holding my breath, not trying to breathe any air at all.
it's a little smoky.
It is a little smoky. It is just, man. I was watching the news the other night, and they said in Roseburg, Oregon, which is right in the center of Oregon, the air quality index was 567.
Oh, my gosh.
I've spent the night in that town a few times, and I'm like, oh my, I just, out of curiosity, wonder what that looks like.
Yeah.
It's just like, because it gets up over, 200 here, and we, alarms are going off and everything else. So
I can't imagine it being that thick. I've seen the worst here right around 200.
Yeah, so that seems to be about where it maxes out here, where it's, we start canceling events and speaking of canceling events, we were all so delighted that we could have mass outdoors. It's like, oh, no, you don't.
I know. It's one thing after another. It's like, oh, my goodness. Oh. Jesus, we need you.
Oh, boy. Is God talking to us or is God talking to us?
Yeah. I know. Every single day.
Every single day, every minute of every day. But, it's been doing this program has always been a complete joy in my life, but never more so than right now, because every day I get to talk to people who are out in the vineyard working, and it's really true. I haven't seen any ministry or any need where we've just closed up the door and said, no, we're sorry. That's a ministry where we try to help people, but we're sorry we're closed until things get better. It hasn't happened in the Catholic Church.
No, and the reason is because we're Catholic. We've been called.
That's absolutely right. It might be difficult to go to church. It might be certain vulnerable groups shouldn't be going, and yet all of our ministries go on.
Yes.
So.
Oh my, yes. Because we need it. Nowhere in the Bible does it say, and it will be easy.
Other than when Jesus says, follow me and, I'll make it easy. But it's, if we just all went to just the words of Jesus, He doesn't ask us anything to do anything that doesn't make sense.
Right.
He just doesn't. It's sometimes he asks us to do things that are hard, like love your enemy. That's pretty darn hard.
Yep.
It's hard to love your next door neighbor sometimes, you know.
Yep.
But so how are things at the conference? How are things? Are you keeping the legislature in line? And
well, all I can say right now is thank the Lord mm-hmm. that the session is over.
Right.
Right.
And we're still incredibly busy. But it's kind of a blessing at this point that the legislators have gone home to their local districts so that they can focus on whatever they focus on when they're home and not on passing bills here
yeah.
in California.
Yeah.
Right now it's assessing what happened during this session. Getting our messages to the governor on those bills that we want him to sign and those bills that we want him not to sign. And really turning our attention now to November and what we may need to, you know, keep in mind as Catholics, as people of faith, and participants in the public square. And let me emphasize at this point, we are called to be witnesses in that public square.
Yes.
And we are called to be Christians mm-hmm. in that public square.
Right.
So you know, the bishops and everyone through our church network are looking for ways that we can, you know, create dialogue that is informative and helps people make the best decisions possible for voting in November.
Yeah, and if you don't believe any of that, just go read Faithful Citizenship, which is a really powerful document.
And one that has a lot of good information for Catholics
yep.
to use as they prepare for the November elections. As we know, the public dialogue can be pretty ugly at times. And I think that is a calling for us to be level-headed, to be patient, to be forgiving, and also informative, to inform ourselves and to inform our brothers and sisters as to the important issues that help our communities, so that way they can make the right decision.
Yeah, and you know there's some obvious issues that you know are pretty apparent to Catholics and where the church has taken very very specific and very strong positions, but then there are a whole bunch of issues that are they're not coin flips, but they take some discernment. And
yes,
and because you go, well, I'm not so sure how I feel about that. And then you know, and I find that reading obviously the what you people put out on for the California Catholic Conference from a Catholic perspective, pointing out, okay, this is even if you might not be making a recommendation. And you don't make recommendation on candidates. We should tell people that. But on right. the issues and on the propositions, it really helps me understand it. It helps me to read the sample ballot, the arguments for and against, and then even the rebuttals to the arguments for and against. I'm waiting for them to have a rebuttal to the rebuttal, but I guess they haven't gone that far yet. And you know, it's a little like reading Supreme Court decisions. You know, you read just one side, like the concurring decisions, the majority decision. You go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then you read the minority decision, the dissent, and you go, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And there's in my mind, there are a lot of issues out there that are that way. And there are a lot of people running for offices where a lot of the hot button issues of the day aren't even present.
Right.
People running are not necessarily present. Sometimes they're lurking, but people running for city council, people running for county supervisor, running for school board, running for the water board, even, you know, a lot of things where you need a lot of discernment, but they're very important. You know, so many of the issues that really affect our daily lives and affect everybody else's daily lives are very local.
Yeah, and part of the teaching of faithful citizenship is that, you know, it's more than simply going into a voting booth and voting one way or the mm-hmm. other. It's getting engaged in your community, finding out, you know, what it is that really helps your community to thrive and support one another. So it's really about people engaging and making those decisions and learning before they make those decisions when they go into a voting booth.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's it's right around the corner, and with so many people, especially this year, you know, voting by mail, voting absentee. Some of the counties will have early voting. I know the county I'm in, you can vote for in early November. You know, you can vote on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Election Day. You know, in person. You know, not just drop off a absentee ballot or something, but you can actually vote in person. And a lot of I almost said dioceses. A lot of counties are going to that, and trying to, you know, make it as easy as possible for people to vote. I'm always stunned to see how low voter turnout is, and that's of registered voters.
Yeah.
You know, and only maybe 3/4 of the people are even registered to vote, and then maybe 60% of those vote. I think, wow, I just would never want to give up that opportunity to have a say in what goes on in the world. And people say, well, yeah, what difference does my one vote mean? Well, I come from a town where we actually had a city council race that ended in a dead heat. They tied.
All right.
Tied, you know, and you're going, wow, think of all the people who didn't vote who said, oh, man, I could have decided that election.
I've never been involved in an election that close. Trying to think, well, I mean, the presidential election of 2000,
yeah,
was probably the closest one.
Which came down to court decision.
Yeah. And, well, no, I mean, later you had all the news outlets reporting that, according to the count, the original count actually stood.
Right.
So it was. I guess you could say it was up to the courts, but.
I think the court allowed Miami-Dade not to be recounted.
Right.
Yeah.
And but the news outlets counted anyway, and in the end they said no, it was correct, but that took. Months. that was an interesting exercise in civil participation. Let me get back to the propositions that you brought up. I'm not sure we had a chance to discuss those yet.
No, not at all.
Okay, the bishops discussed all 12 propositions that will be on the ballot, and they have decided to take a position on two of those propositions.
Right.
The others are up to individuals to really decide for themselves one way or the other. The bishops encourage folks to go onto our website, the cacatholic.org, and read the explanations of the different propositions. But they have taken a position on Proposition 14 and Proposition 20. Mm-hmm. And both those propositions, the bishops are taking a position of opposing them.
Okay.
And Proposition 14 is the proposal to fund another or to send another $5.5 billion to stem cell research, and particularly to embryonic stem cell.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2003, I believe it was, when Governor Schwarzenegger wanted to send money to the stem cell research folks, I forget what, I think it was $3 billion at that point.
$3 billion, Prop 71.
Yeah, and the bishops opposed that, and for good reason. And as we've seen over the last 17 or 16 years, that money had very little oversight. That money was mostly concentrated on building buildings and hiring people for embryonic stem cell research, and that proposition has resulted in absolutely no therapies at all at this point for anybody suffering from anything.
Even if embryonic stem cell research had borne fruit, if you will, it's still wrong.
It's still immoral. Unethical and immoral. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, because the state is now proposing another $5.5 billion, the bishops have specifically stated that they are opposed to that as well. Although some of the advocates for the proposition are pointing out that the money, some of the money will go to adult stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that that a lot of it's going to go to embryonic stem cell and will destroy fertilized eggs and the potential for human life. So the bishops are squarely opposed to it, and are calling all of people of faith to vote against Proposition 14.
Yeah, and there's no way to vote for adult stem cell research and not vote for it's one package.
That's right.
And people should realize that I hear this all the time. Well, the church is against science. It's against stem cell research. Church is not against stem cell research. It's against embryonic stem cell research,
which is unethical and immoral. And in fact, the bishops and the church has a long history of being at the forefront of science. I mean, they have
Indeed.
The Pontifical Academy of Sciences in Rome,
right,
which brings together, the 82 smartest people in the world to consult with the church on whatever issues are out there that are...
Catholic or not.
Yeah, Catholic or not. Stephen Hawking was on that that committee for a while. But the church is not opposed to science. The church allows science to inform the teaching. And as we know, we need to be engaged with those who are at the cutting edge of scientific research. The other proposition that the bishops have taken a position on in opposing is Proposition 20.
Mm-hmm.
And Proposition 20 is an attempt to overturn previous propositions, 47 and 57, which the bishops supported. And for those who aren't familiar with the history, what happened is that the Supreme Court ordered California to cut down on the number of people who were in our prisons, our state prisons in the state,
mm-hmm.
because they were severely overcrowded. So in order to do that, there was a discussion as to how to cut it down because you have people convicted of crimes. And what was thought was that those folks who were convicted of nonviolent crimes would get priority in being released from prison. They weren't being forgiven. They still were on parole or being right. monitored. But in order to meet the court mandate, they had to cut down. So that was the focal point. And the bishops supported that. But this proposition seeks to expand the number of felonies that are considered violent rather than nonviolent. So it's basically trying to overturn what was previously done before. And so the bishops feel compelled to oppose this attempt by the proposition, and so they are opposing it. The other propositions, there are a lot of propositions out there that do good or try to do good or we feel might not be good, but that's really, the bishops didn't feel it was appropriate for them to take a position. It was really up to folks at the local level to really inform themselves and make those decisions. And you can go to our website, and we try to explain what each proposition says and will do. So hopefully that will help folks to understand and make the right choice in their own hearts.
Well, you know, it's so refreshing because so many propositions, as you know, they have a name which, the Mom Motherhood and Apple Pie Initiative. You know, how could anybody vote against this? And then you see the TV ads and talk about leading the witness. You go, oh, man, that's so evil. How could anybody vote for that? You know, and you don't know. Somebody made an ad, you know, and they're really leading you. And maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. But they are very much advocating in one direction, and if you don't see the other side, it's hard to know which way to go. So it's nice to get a nonpartisan analysis by you folks, but one that is guided by Catholic principles.
Yeah, and where those principles really don't bring you down on one side or the other is where people really need to investigate it for themselves. And let me point out, Proposition 18, that's the proposition that would allow 17-year-olds who, by the time Election Day comes, will be 18 and eligible to vote.
Yep.
It would allow them to vote in the primaries leading up to that election. And that's one of those things is okay, what does our teaching really say about that? And that really comes down to, well, what do people think? Is that something that is good, or does it open up a Pandora's box? What, we don't know. And it, let the community should really decide that for themselves. So we encourage people to think about it and pray about it, and then decide for themselves. But the bishops didn't take a stand one way or the other on that one.
Well, it's interesting because a few months ago, before the California primary, in my newspaper column, I did take a stand on that issue, or at least discussed it with a lean, I guess. We had at that time a 17-year-old who turned 18 on August the 1st. And so she can vote in November. And I remember talking to her before the California primary. We're talking about March, and she was a senior in high school and very, very interested in everything political, especially this year. And having that discussion with her, and she's saying it's weird that I can vote in the general election in November, but I don't get a say about who's going to be on the ballot in November that I'm voting on, because I can't vote in the primary. And she convinced me that, and like I say, it wasn't it was hard and fast, and anybody on the other side of this is immoral. It was a lean towards, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I probably wouldn't have really paid much of attention other than the fact that I had a child who was in that very situation.
Yeah, and you got to think that some of the arguments that I hear for it are actually pretty good, and that is that, you know, you want to encourage these young folks who are going to be voting to get excited, to really want to engage, and one of the ways to do that is to let them vote in the primaries or in those elections leading up to the general election. Get them engaged, and this could do it. The other side of that coin is, in our society, we do draw lines.
Yeah.
We say that anybody who's under the age of 18 years old is, you know, cannot be held responsible for their decision.
Yep.
So where does that, you know, I get the arguments on both sides, but I'm a dad too, and I would probably lean towards, giving my kid the ability to really engage, because I try to encourage them all the time that it's their civic responsibility to be involved.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because they're clearly artificial lines. I mean, they're based on common sense and reasonableness. But I remember when I first could vote, you had to be 21, and the drinking age was 21. It still is, but many states it was 18 or 19, things like that. And yet you couldn't vote till you're 21, but you could be executed for a crime when you were 18. And I thought to myself at that time, that wouldn't happen in the United States. I mean, we're not executing political prisoners and things like that. But you were being executed because you broke a law that you don't even have the right to vote on.
Because you made a decision.
Because you made a decision, yeah.
Back then, it was deemed that if you made a decision to sign a contract to rent an apartment or a house, you couldn't be held responsible because you weren't mature enough to make that decision.
Yep.
It's totally crazy.
And, laws about, sexual abuse all kinds of other things. You know, you're under a certain age, it's like Katie bar the door. You know, that child is not capable of making an informed decision. And yet 21 always seemed to me, it's not even a round number. I don't know where 21 first came from. But, you know, and now suddenly we went from 21 to vote all the way down to 18, just overnight. You know, that's about 15% less, you know. And the one thing that my daughter, the point she was making, she said that we've got, I don't know, 550 people in our graduating class from high school. About half of them are 18, and about half of them are 17. But we're all getting that same diploma. You know, we're all being told we have now performed all the necessary requirements to graduate from high school and to go out into the world. And yet half of them are now empowered to vote because they are clearly mature, and et cetera. And the other half, nope, you're not mature enough yet. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, and now the science is telling us that the maturation of our brains is probably still not happening until our mid-20s.
Oh, I know. It's I find every year my I just had a birthday, so my what is middle age? Oh, it starts at this. It moves up every year, you know. Oh, you're only 40? You're just, do they let you vote? You're only 40, you know.
Yes, I call 40-year-old kids. Yeah, I've gotten to that stage, too.
Yeah, it's.
But those are interesting questions. I've never asked myself, why 21?
Yeah. Yeah, where did that? It would be interesting to research that. Where did it? And it was universal in the United States. I mean, you had to be 21 to vote, and in most places, 21 to drink. And you usually when we do things, it's round numbers. It's 15, 20, 25, like that. And it was 21. And I'm going, where did that come from? Especially, and I don't know what the voting age was way back at the Founding Fathers and all that, because there were a lot of restrictions on who could vote. You had to be male. You had to be a property owner. There were various restrictions besides age. But back then, they didn't live that long either, you know. So I think, you know, to be a president, you have to be 35.
Is it 35 or 36? Right around there.
It's 35 for 35. President.
Okay.
I think for U.S. Senate, you actually have to be 30.
Right.
And interestingly, Joe Biden was elected when he was 29, but wasn't sworn in until he was 30.
It's 30, right.
Yeah. So it's just, and I think Congress, the House is 25, I believe.
Yeah, it's lower than the Senate.
Yeah.
This is also fascinating. But why people should get engaged. It's a lot of this is very interesting.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, another thing that is sometimes on the ballot in some states, and there's it really differs, can people who have been convicted of a felony, can they vote, you know? And a number of states have re-enfranchised them, if you will. Florida had it on the ballot a few years ago, and it was over right around 2/3 voted yes, which really surprised me.
And it's on the ballot this time, Proposition 17.
Right.
Because here in California, those who were convicted and have served their parole time and are done automatically get to vote again.
Right.
In some states, that doesn't happen. And here, Proposition 17 would allow people while still on parole to vote.
Right.
And that's been an interesting conversation. Even among the bishops, that was interesting because there were those who kind of thought that, you know, maybe for us as a society, it's better to think in terms of finishing your parole, finishing up before you're allowed to vote. Others were very supportive of it, and that was one of the reasons why they felt, okay, people need to make up their own minds on this one, and we'll try to inform them as best we can.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting because people can say, well, if you're still on parole, you haven't really served your sentence. And other people can say, well, they're out. And if, you know, the rate of recidivism is high for a lot of reasons. And the more stake you can give somebody in society, the better chance they're going to go straight. Allowing somebody to vote. I don't know that it has really been studied in those states where it has been allowed as to what percentage actually go vote.
Right. It's only a handful
Only a handful? Yeah.
Like six.
Oh, gee. Low.
We're one of the few states that automatically gives back a voting right as soon as they're done with parole, which I like a lot. You know, once you're done and you're back to being a citizen, you should have all the rights of a citizen. So I've always thought that was a mistake by other states not to do that.
Yep.
But it'll be interesting to see how that fares, because that's a really good question, a good civic question.
It really is. It sounds almost like a project for a senior in high school or something, you know, like a class project. You take this side and argue it, and you take this side and argue it.
The fun days.
Yeah. So, and explain, and we always explain it here too, but the bishops do not take positions on candidates.
No. The reality is that both parties, and let me say up front, being a member of either party is okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to go to perdition because you belong to one party or the other. But we know that we can work with both parties, and we also know we have challenges with both parties.
Right.
And in order to keep working with those parties, we don't take a public position supporting them one way or the other.
Right.
And so what we do ask for people to do is to inform themselves as to which party is best aligned in their hearts, and then change that party, make mm-hmm. that party mm-hmm. more Catholic, bring their moral values to that party, so when they put their party platforms together, when they put their priorities together, Catholic values are front and present in those priority sessions. And the fact that people keep saying things like, well, my politics and my faith are two different things, that's been a problem for too long.
It has been, yeah.
Yeah, and it's encouraged those who are not Catholic to fill the void with their moral values.
Right.
And that's a problem for us, and one that we really have to fix. But the way to do that is to allow people to really share their faith with either party, whatever party they join, really make it Catholic, no matter which party.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that I've found, Andy, is I might find a candidate that gives lip service to something that I think is a really important issue, and then I vote for them. And 4 years later, that person has not mentioned that issue once, whether they're in an executive position or a legislative position. It suddenly was not a priority. It was a priority to get my vote, and then they did nothing about it, you know. And just having them in office theoretically with a certain belief didn't result in any action. You know, and you have to discern that as well.
Yes. That's why you don't just simply go in and vote and forget about everything after that. You stay engaged in your community and hold those who are elected to office, hold them to their word.
I remember a city council candidate one time, and a number of years ago, and he was really, really, really strong on an issue that was important to me. It is a town issue. It wasn't a, you know, one of the quote-unquote moral issues of the day. And a four-year term, and about 3.5 years into it, he's running for re-election, and he calls me and wants, you know, will I endorse him, or would I endorse, you know, contribute to his campaign or whatever. And I said, what about that issue you were so, you know, that was your platform, man, 4 years ago. And he said, well, you know, the time just wasn't right to bring that up. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's, but you want me to vote for you again? Yeah. Well, it's an interesting time, that's for sure. Everybody is saying this is the most important election in the history of the world. I don't think that's the first time we've heard that, but it certainly seems like it, doesn't it? It's just
In terms of where we've come to at this point. I mean, you can't honestly say that public dialogue, whether it's on the congressional floor or in our state houses, is very nice. I mean, or informative. It's just very combative, and it's difficult to really find the things that we need to really know to make a decision during those debates. And on and I miss McNeil Lehrer and some of those other shows that I grew up with, thinking I could learn from them because they would discuss the issues rather than just get mad at each other.
Right.
And now we're at the point, I I mean, you can't deny this, but where there are certain segments in our society who say, well, because you take that point of view, you have no business being on television or in front of any right. sort of group of people. You need to be silenced.
Absolutely.
And that seems to be the way we're trending towards and why this election is so important. But the potential for civil discourse is still problematic for us. I think it's going to be a very ugly election cycle, and that's why I think we as Catholics need to be very engaged in this election cycle and sharing our faith as we move towards November.
Yeah, and do your best, no matter which side of any of this you're on. Do your best to be civil and kind and debate with passion, but don't make it personal.
Right.
Yeah, it's a rough time. I can't think of a time in my lifetime where and I've paid attention to politics since I was a kid, you know, or certainly in high school, and where we are just so divided in a almost a vicious way,
and on so many different issues. I recently got into a discussion on race, and it got ugly. I mean, yep. It got so ugly, and I was really fascinated by the way this one priest discussed race. He was an African American priest, and I just wish he had been on television prime mm-hmm. time, because he was so kind and loving. And really talk about, well, this is how we need to talk to one another, because this issue is very personal and can be very alienating.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we are called to be not only involved, but loving and caring and forgiving.
Yeah, just like that guy Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, him.
Yeah. Well, Andy, it's always a joy to talk with you. I always learn a lot, and I appreciate all your great efforts. So may the good Lord bless your ministry there at the California Catholic Conference. Everybody, go to cacatholic.org. Get on with the Catholic Legislative Network and get all their alerts. And vote early, vote often.
when it's right for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Bob. God bless everyone.
Hey, God bless you too, Andy. Thanks so much. It's very, very interesting times, and but the conference does a really good job of just explaining the issues, explaining where the bishops are, and it's also very much worth reading the document Faithful Citizenship, which talks about our obligations, our duties, and our opportunities as Catholics to be part of the dialogue and to really take our opinions into the marketplace. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-1212. 4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is John Watkins, Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, John, and thanks for all you do and all the people on your staff too, and all your volunteers too, with Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, just doing some great work, boy, with the pandemic and the fires and just all the normal things that they do at Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. So God bless them and God bless their ministry. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Deacon Ken Crawford. Deacon, it's been a while. Good, welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on. You are going to be one of the presenters at Ministry Days.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. Ministry Days coming up on the 26th of September. That's a Saturday. And go to ministrydays.com to learn about all the presenters and the keynotes, et cetera. Tell us about your topic.
So, yeah, I'm actually breaking from my normal routine. Normally I speak about either church history or maybe our connection to politics. But this year has forced us into a lot of uncomfortable boxes. And I've been very active on the live stream team at my parish.
Oh, very good.
And we've learned a lot about how to live stream well. I think it's safe to say that Catholics as a whole, we are not very good at video and live streaming and all of this stuff. And so I thought it would be a good idea to share what I've learned about how we can do a good job of live streaming, in particular our masses. The emphasis will be on mass, but I think the concepts would also apply to catechetical events or anything else that we might consider live streaming.
Wouldn't it have been great if they'd live streamed the Last Supper?
Well, I'm sure Twitter would have gone gone viral when Judas, you know, started talking. So
yeah, somebody would have been critical of the bread and the wine too, I'm sure. Oh man, yeah, that would have been great. So talk about what you know when this first came up at your parish and how you folks tackled it.
Well, I mean, like all pretty much all parishes, we hadn't been doing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there was an occasional wedding or maybe, you know, when the bishop came for confirmation, we
right.
would video it, but we wouldn't live stream it. So, yeah, you know, we were starting from scratch and doing it with, you know, all of, you know, a few days' notice.
Mm-hmm.
So what, you know, the first question you ask yourself is, you know, how do you do this? How do you get it on Facebook? How do you get it on YouTube? And for most parishes, I think they pretty quickly went to the easy solutions of, you know, just use your phone, right? Because
mm-hmm.
we know how to do that, you know, some of us anyway have been doing that, you know, with small conversations with friends and family
right.
And all of that. But really, that's a very weak solution. And so we very quickly moved to going to, you know, consumer grade, but, you know, high quality cameras and, you know, relatively inexpensive you know, hardware that was designed for live streaming so that we could, you know, do a better job of
mm-hmm.
better quality video. And actually, one of the things I'll be spending a fair amount of time talking about that I often get questions, people will call from other parishes, how are you guys doing this, is how to put text on top of the video. You
uh-huh.
want to put, you know, up the Lord's Prayer or the Creed or
sure.
what the response is to the Psalm, and being able to overlay, you know, text on top of the video is, you know, obviously a great enhancer to the end result. So we'll be talking about that. The other thing I will spend a lot of time on that I think we spend far too little time thinking about is the quality of the audio. Most of us are just using a, you know, whatever the camera or the phone's microphone is, and obviously in our churches they're so echoey, they do very poorly with, you know, that sort of an environment. And if you think about it, if you could only have one, if you could only have the audio or the video, which is the most important? And the answer is the audio.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In fact, this is the one place where the church has done some amount of live streaming. We've been putting the Mass on radio for years.
Right.
And many people have enjoyed that. But imagine the inverse of just looking at a video stream with no audio.
Yeah, right.
You'd be like, oh, that's interesting at some level, but you really wouldn't be interested. And so I'll spend a lot of time talking about how we can improve the audio quality so that we're not dealing with so many echoes, so that it's sufficiently loud enough, you know, when the musician's playing, when the priest is talking, when the lector is at the ambo, all of those sorts of things. So,
well, you know, you make a real good point about text, too, because I remember the, it's embarrassing to admit, but, you know, the first time we're all in the living room, we're watching Mass on the TV, and, of course, only our 14-year-old son could figure out how to get it on the TV, and, you know, we don't have any prompts. The people in front of us aren't standing. Oh, we stand now. You know, they're not, you know, they're not, oh, they're saying that prayer. That's right. That's the response. When you're just sitting there by yourself, it's a little embarrassing. Like, I forgot what the response is here. You know,
yeah, it's like the national anthem, right? We all think we know it until we have to sing it by ourselves.
Until you have to sing it alone. And
then all of a sudden you realize how much you needed the crowd around you.
Boy, we've seen, the singer sometimes way too many times at a basketball game or a football game, and they get halfway through and they start repeating the words and then they're lost. that's true. I remember one time up in northern Idaho at a little church, and we had a family reunion, and went to the parish and knocked on the door. We wanted to come to a weekday Mass on a Wednesday. That was like when everybody was going to be there. And I said, "What time's Mass in the morning?" And the priest says, "What time would you like it to be?" and there we were, some of us not Catholics, some of them fallen away, some of us, you know, regular Catholics. And at one point, he looked at us like, "Are you going to stand?" You know, like we were waiting for the prompt, and there was nobody prompting us, you know. It was embarrassing. So,
or the inverse is there's been a couple times at the parish where, like, the altar servers will stand or something when they're not supposed to,
right.
Like they got the wrong cue, and then all of a sudden the whole congregation is standing because, you know, they figure the altar servers know what they're doing.
Exactly. and the altar server's 9 years old, and exactly, yeah.
So, definitely, I think it helps our live streams a lot to have those little sorts of prompts. And frankly, it's one of those things that there's almost no limit. And it actually also makes it an evangelization tool because, you know, somebody who's not Catholic comes along and they just see the Mass. It's hard enough in person, but it's even worse online. But the more you could do to give them some understanding of what they're seeing, the more they're likely to say, "Hey, that was fascinating."
Yeah, I know. I remember watching the funeral of John Paul II. You know, and it comes on at midnight or something our time, and they have NBC provided commentator. You know, and it was like they were covering a golf tournament because they were whispering, you know, and all that. But it was very helpful to have.
Yeah.
A priest there and a sort of a regular play-by-play kind of guy explaining the Mass as it went along, because, you know, in that case, there were an awful lot of non-Catholics watching.
Absolutely. I don't know if I could get my pastor to go for the golf commentator. That might be a bridge too far.
I had the great privilege of being at Ground Zero down in the hole that was there when Pope Benedict came to Ground Zero, and I was on live radio. There were about 20 of us that they let into this, and it was just a lucky draw. You know, it was like a pool reporter, and they draw a name and say, "Okay, you're going to get to go." And being there, and we're on little bleachers about 30 feet from the Holy Father as the various survivors of people who had died came around to talk to the Holy Father, and a solemn, solemn moment, and very just about everybody else there was either filming or they were print, and I was the only live radio, and I was doing the golf voice because
you had no other choice, right?
I had no choice, and every time I opened my mouth, the rest of the people would turn around and glare at me like, "Hey, shh, come on, it's the Pope," you know. I'm like, I'm on live, right? It can't have dead air, you know.
Right.
But got through it.
Yeah, we've actually struggled a little bit with that, not on the same kind of way, but one of the things we've also learned as we've gotten more complex and had multiple cameras is it is important for the team to be able to communicate with each other, with the person who's picking, you know, which camera to look at,
right,
and be able to say, okay, you're not online right now, you know, you can go look, you can go to this other spot or whatever. And so we have started to have audio communication between the various folks. And you have exactly that same problem of, you know, mm-hmm. you like to talk, but you need to figure out a way to do it quietly enough that at a minimum you're not disturbing Father. But actually one of the newer things we've been dealing with is now we're – so at first all the live streams were, you know, just 10 people in the room, you know, no congregation.
Right.
But now, you know, for a short period in June, June-ish, and now starting again, we're doing masses with a congregation there, which adds yet another level of complexity, both on just general side, but also on this kind of audio side of talking to each other. You're disturbing people who are sitting in pews, often very close to you.
And do you have to worry about privacy concerns in terms of, I came to mass, but I don't want to be on TV?
We've done our best to, yeah, so we've thought about that. We think from a, and I'm not a lawyer by any means, but we think that actually because it is a public event and the cameras are, shown publicly, mm-hmm. we're not in any legal trouble. But we do want to respect that their privacy. So generally what we do is those moments where you're more likely to see the congregation, like the reception of communion,
mm-hmm.
we won't look there. We'll take a shot of the crucifix,
right,
or you
right.
know, go to the Marian statue. Our pastor has a huge devotion to Mary, so he loves it when we do that. And we'll just find ways to kind of, you know, do other things besides looking at the people receiving communion.
We're with Deacon Ken Crawford, who will be one of the presenters at Ministry Days on September the 26th, Saturday. Ken, what about expense? Has this been expensive or moderately so?
Obviously everything's relative with money, and that, we will talk about that, about, you know, how expensive you can go and how you can stay cheap. I think if you minimum really to get off the ground, if you're willing to kind of go for used equipment, all of that, you're talking about at least $1,000 really to be a little bit more comfortable, a couple thousand dollars to get off the floor of what you need. And then everything above that is just, going better, adding cameras, getting better video by using, you know, better lenses that let in more light and all those kinds of things. So I would say the current setup we're using right now is approximately, I haven't done any real math on it, but, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 kind of setup. And we do have plans down the road to turn that into a, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 setup. So it's just a question of what you can afford. Thus far, we've been doing it almost entirely based on parishioner donations and, equipment that they're willing to loan the church.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, we're wanting over time to, you know, have the parish own that equipment and all of that. So, I'd say $1,000 if you really want to just do the absolute bare minimum. $2,000 gives you a bit more flexibility, and then you can go up from there.
How many cameras do you employ for a mass?
We're a two-camera setup.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to get to three. That's when with one camera, your two is such a huge benefit because one of the hardest parts of video is moving, right?
Mm-hmm.
The jerkiness, the zooming, the focusing. And with two cameras, you get to this point where you can have one camera in position filming, and while he's showing the live stream content, the other one can be getting in position. And so it doesn't matter if he's doing a good job of zooming or focusing and all of that, because he's not live.
Mm-hmm.
And then you switch to that second camera, and then the first camera can now, you know, awkwardly get to wherever it needs to get, and you don't need someone who's wonderful with, you know, video. Even still, there are those rare moments throughout the Mass, you know, a handful of moments where the transitions are quick enough that that's a little bit hard. And so I would love to get to three. And I think when you get to three, you're at a place where there's very few moments that are difficult from a, you know, transition standpoint. So, like, actually, one of the ones we're struggling with right now is you've got the lector at the ambo, you've got the psalmist at the cantor's ambo,
mm-hmm.
and there's a moment where they're both sitting down, right? One sat
right.
down and the other hasn't stood up. And so you don't really want to look at either of them. You'd love a wider shot of the church, but I only have two cameras, right? So one's on one, one's on the other, and we get to look at an empty ambo somewhere for about 10 seconds. So,
do most parishes have enough people with the technical know-how to make a semi-professional production?
Well, I'd say the thing is, it's not something where you just need the willingness to learn.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing here where you're, you know, having to get a programming manual or anything like that. So how many parishes have people who already have this expertise? Probably not that many, but
mm-hmm.
I think if you get 2 to 4 people who are willing to say, no, let's tackle this problem, and willing to kind of make it their ministry,
mm-hmm.
They don't have to be experts in just about anything. They just have to have the willingness to learn. So I'm hoping that part of the group that will come here are people who are like that, who are saying, what we have right now is acceptable, but we could do a lot better, and I'm willing to learn.
Well, I'm definitely going to be, this is one I'm going to be watching. So it's Ministry Days, Saturday, September 26th. Go to ministrydays.com to sign up. You can participate in the workshops. You can hear the keynotes. And the bonus this year is that all 24 workshops in English and 21 in Spanish will be online, and you can watch them at your leisure, not just on Ministry Days, but in the days and weeks ahead. So it's a real bonus this year, even though it won't be in person. It's a great bargain. ministrydays.com. Deacon Kent Crawford, thanks so much for your time. It's good to talk to you again, and thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Take care. That's Deacon Ken Crawford, again, the ministrydays.com. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.